So grab a Bible and turn it to Judges, the book of Judges, chapter 2. We will be talking about Joshua this morning, but we're going to start in Judges chapter 2, verse 7. It's good to see you all here this morning, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I've seen a few extra yawns with a lost hour of sleep last night, but good to be together on this beautiful day to worship and honor our God. It's been almost a year since Brother Max Dawson was here conducting our last gospel meeting, and since he did the men's leadership workshop with us. And in our men's classes, we've been working through the material he left with us with those leadership workshop. We've completed that study last Thursday at our men's class. I've also shared some of those things as we've talked about leadership from the pulpit. We've talked about shepherding and deacons and just in general leadership, spiritual leadership in some sermons. I don't know about you, but especially us men, but I have been inspired and encouraged to be the spiritual leader that God has called me to be. And I hope that that's the same for you men. That you have a challenge ahead of you, and that the Bible has been laid out before you, the challenge for us to rise to shepherd our families if we are able and willing to aspire to be shepherds of God's people, to be deacons of the church of the Lord, to lead in whatever capacity God has called us to do. There's a fire that ought to be in us to do that. This morning, to top off our leadership study, I want to share some simple lessons from one of the greatest leaders in the entire Bible, Joshua. Here in Judges chapter 2, the people have entered the land. Joshua has brought them through the Jordan River, and they have begun to conquer the land. And it says in verse 7, "The people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, who had seen all the work of the Lord which he had done for Israel. Then Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. So all the time that Joshua was leading the people were faithful to the Lord. That is saying a lot, especially when you consider this point forward in Israel's history. Primarily, that was not the case. I mean, from this point forward, you just see a downward spiral of God's people turning away from God. And even the generation before Joshua, remember the first generation of people that came out of Egypt, the very people who crossed through the Red Sea that saw God's works firsthand, even they weren't faithful to God. They complained. They had to wander 40 years in the wilderness because of that. But through Joshua's leadership, the people were faithful. Now, granted, there's a lot of credit to that, to the people themselves, that they trusted in God, that second generation, I mean, that they made the choice themselves. But I think this is also a credit to the spiritual leadership of Joshua himself. If Joshua had not been the spiritual leader that he was, where would the people have been? I mean, how did that work out for the kings? When the kings did not serve God, what did the people do? They turned away from God. But what made Joshua such a successful spiritual leader? That's what I want to think with you about this morning. Oh, how does Joshua serve as a model of a spiritual leader? There are four things, these are simple things, but four things that I want to share with you, reasons why Joshua serves as a model spiritual leader. First of all, we see that he had a godly mentor. Joshua succeeded in part because of the example that went before him, of course, Moses. Joshua was with Moses for the 40 years that they were in the wilderness. You think about that. That's a long time, number one, to be in the wilderness, but that's also a long time to be following in the footsteps of your spiritual mentor. He was there with Moses. When, for example, when Moses went up on Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments from God, the elders didn't get to go with him. Aaron, the high priest, didn't get to go with him, but the book of Exodus says that Joshua went up there with him. He was with Moses whenever Moses bowed before the Lord, whenever the people were unfaithful and Moses interceded with him. Joshua saw that. He witnessed that and heard that. And I think this is important for a couple of practical reasons. First of all, we need to realize that before we can lead, We have to learn. Before we can lead, we have to learn. Turn to Exodus chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17 is actually the first time that we read of Joshua in the entire Bible. And the people have come out of Egypt. They are on their way to Mount Sinai and to receive the commandment to enter into the covenant with the Lord. And this nation called Amalek comes out and fights against the people. And it says in verse 9, So Moses said to Joshua, "Choose men for us to go out, fight against Amalek. Tomorrow I will station myself on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." Joshua did as Moses told him and fought against Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And of course, this is the story when Moses had to have his hands held up, because when his hands came down, the Israelites would lose the battle. And when his hands would rise up, God would be with his people. But it was Joshua who Moses said, "You go down and you lead the people and you fight against Amalek." Joshua would have been a fairly young man whenever this happened. This was within the first year that Israel had come out of Egypt. So I want you to realize that even though he is leading here, he is leading the people, he is also learning a very valuable lesson here. He's being called upon by his mentor, by Moses, to do this great thing. He is in training, as it were, for what's going to happen in the book of Joshua. Joshua is going to be the one who's going to lead them to conquer the land, to fight the Lord's battles. Here he is doing that work in training. But I want you to see, especially in verse 10, that Joshua did as Moses told him. Joshua did what his mentor instructed him to do. That is key. If we want to lead as men, we first have to learn from others and follow others. Sometimes, especially young men, we don't like to listen to others because we think we've got it all figured out. I know a younger preacher, not too much younger than me, he entered into a preacher training program with an older preacher, and it did not go well, because he was not willing to listen to the older preacher and follow his instructions and follow his advice. How is that going to work out well for that young man? Young men, we need to learn to submit to those that are older than us. 1 Peter chapter 5, which Scott read for us, talks about that. "You younger men, submit to your elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility." This is absolutely critical for the future generation of leaders. A lot of times we want to jump into leading whenever we haven't taken the time and invested our hearts into learning what leading looks like by looking at the leadership of those who have gone before us. We need humility to learn what it means to lead. Leading is not about creating a new path for yourself. Leading doesn't mean cutting a new path for everyone else, striking out on your own, or going where no one has gone before. Most often, leading involves continuing the work that others have started. And that's exactly what you see the case in Joshua's life. He just continued what Moses started. So before we can lead, we have to learn. Another practical reason this is important is we have to look for the right kind of mentors, the right kind of leaders. In Numbers chapter 12, verse 3, we read just a side note in this book of the kind of character that Moses had. This is the story of when Moses' brother Aaron and his sister Miriam start complaining against their brother Moses. You know, why is Moses the leader? Why did God pick him? What, you know, aren't we just as good as him? And it says in verse 3, "The man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth." What made Moses such a good leader? There's a lot of qualities: his strength, his courage, his resolve, but most importantly, his humility. He was meeker than anyone else on the face of the earth. That's the kind of people, the men, that we need to be looking to as our spiritual mentors. We tend to focus on men who are not so humble. We tend to focus on men who talk big, carry a big stick, who are able to snap people into obedience. Those aren't the kind of people that are going to lead us down the right road. We need to be able to identify the spiritual mentors who were like Moses, the kind of men who are going to enter, who are going to mediate on behalf of God's people like Moses did, and fall on their faces before God when the people of God don't really deserve that. Who plead on the behalf of the people of God. Ultimately, we need to be looking for men and women like Christ to follow. Sometimes we look to our fathers as examples. For some of us, those are the spiritual mentors we have. But it may not necessarily be. Maybe your fathers weren't good spiritual leaders. Sometimes they weren't always the best examples of real spiritual leadership. Yes, they may have put food on the table. Yes, they may have had, put clothes on our backs and roof over our heads, that kind of thing. But spiritual leadership goes far beyond that. Spiritual leadership is teaching the Word of God and modeling the kind of love that God has for us. And so we may look to that outside of our families. We might look elsewhere in the church. Mentors are critical. But what's even more critical is that we follow and look for the right kind of men and women who lead like Christ. The second reason why Joshua was such a good leader is because he had courage to lead against the grain. He had courage to lead against the grain. You've been studying in the book of Numbers on Sunday morning. And Numbers chapter 14, we read of the spies who were sent into Canaan, their report. Joshua was one of only two men of those 12 who came back with a good report and said, look, we can take the land. God has promised. Joshua showed us an example of what it means as a leader to choose faith over fear. The other 10 spies were overcome with fear, and that fear spread throughout the rest of the camp. But Joshua chose faith. He chose to trust. Not only did Joshua and Caleb stand up against the million-plus people of the congregation, but they stood against the other 10 spies who saw the exact same things that they did, who saw the giants, who saw the fortified cities, who saw the exact same things and were overcome with fear. Think about how intimidating that would have been to stand up to that crowd, to your peers. And in fact, Numbers chapter 14 says in verse 10 that all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Joshua was certainly standing against the grain here. As leaders, sometimes that has to be. We stand and we lead against what the grain is. Godly leadership is about pointing people not to what's the popular way, but pointing people to God's way. And of course, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7 that God's way is most often not the popular way. He says to us in the Sermon on the Mount, enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find this path. The job of a spiritual leader is to, number one, remain committed to that narrow way himself, to be one of the few that enters it, but then also help people understand that God's way is not the popular way. We need to realize, if we want to be leaders, that good leaders are always going to have their critics. Look at Moses' life. Look at Joshua's life. Look at Jesus' life. Didn't Jesus have his critics? But yet, they didn't let that criticism, the people that they stood up against, change their decision to serve the Lord. And sometimes, I think as men, we're very sensitive to the criticism of others, especially if we're struggling to be leaders. We may see it as an attack on our pride. We may see it as a deflation of our ego. We need to bring ourselves down. Spiritual leadership is not about our ego. It's not about who we are, but it's about pointing people to God. Sometimes we may make a decision because we don't want to face criticism from others. If we realize that something is the right decision, and we say we're going to make that decision, but other people are going to criticize it, sometimes we back away from that decision because we don't want to face the fallout of that. Brethren, we need the strength and the courage of Joshua to lead against the grain. Unfortunately, elders sometimes are subject to criticism from their own congregation because of the decisions and the judgments that they have to make as the shepherds. Sometimes the issues that churches face in rejecting God's truth are because the leaders have given into those criticisms. Think about the issue of women preachers today. It's very popular for aren't people to buy into the criticism that if you don't have women preachers, you're somehow sexist, and just ignoring the Word of God on that issue. Sometimes those issues are perpetuated because church leaders are increasingly bending to popular opinion. We need the strength and the courage to lead against God's grain. Number three, Joshua had trust in God's direction. Joshua trusted God's direction. There's no better place to illustrate this than Joshua chapter 6. When the people are camped against Jericho, the first battle that they're going to face in Canaan. And God gives Joshua this battle plan of encircle the city, march around it for 6 days. You know, what kind of battle plan is that? How's that going to bring the walls down? But Joshua did just that. We learn here that spiritual leaders trust God, not themselves. Just, it's interesting, though, before God gives him this battle plan, the very chapter previous to this, in chapter 5, in verse 13, it says, "Now it came about when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked. And behold, a man was standing opposite him with a sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, 'Are you for us or are you for our adversaries?'" Basically, whose side are you on? You for us or for them? And he said, "No. Rather, I indeed come now as captain of the host of the Lord." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and bowed down and said to him, "What has my Lord to say to his servant?" Why did God give him kind of this strange encounter with this angelic captain here, this angelic being? The point is simple. When Joshua says to him, "Are you for us or for them?" his answer is, "Neither, but I am for the Lord." Who are you with, Joshua? Are you going to stand with me because I'm with the Lord? Who are you going to be with? Joshua needed reminding here, before he entered into the battle with Jericho, that you need to stand with God. Spiritual leaders are those that stand with God. They trust in God, not in themselves. We need to remember, brothers, that we are not the ones in control. Leadership is not about control. Leadership is about trusting in God. And it's not about being unaccountable. We are truly accountable to God himself. And so whenever Joshua receives the battle plan from the Lord, he could have easily said, "Well, God, I've got a better plan. Let's use our ladders. Let's climb over the wall. Let's use our spears." And the people could have easily said the same thing, but they didn't. Leaders need to trust God, not themselves. Elders, shepherds need to trust God's plan for the church. Fathers and mothers need to trust God's plan for parenting and what it means to bring up our children in God's teaching and discipline. Evangelists need to trust God's gospel as that which saves. We need to trust God. Before we move on to our last point, though, about Joshua, I do want to point out that spiritual leaders are not perfect. In Joshua chapter 7, after they defeat Jericho, Joshua chapter